Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's March the 21st. This is a pre-Pesach shiur. I asked Rabbi Feinlich why we were so ambitious with the setup of the amount of chairs we have here. He said because we're set up for Rebbetzin Feldman's class on Tuesday night. this evening, about less than 2 hours ago, I was sitting in my dining room and I heard a muffled call for help. It wasn't like a call for help like scary or frightening. It was just like, I need help. And it sounded like my daughters, two of my daughters. And I was busy with something and they're banging and they're... So finally one of my kids came and told me that my two daughters are stuck in their room. They closed the door and the handle won't work anymore. and so we went, I got my tools and took off the handle. Still couldn't get the door open. I passed some tools under the door for them to knock the hinges off of the door, to take the pins out. They couldn't do it. So my son went around the house and climbed in through the window and he tried to bang it out. He couldn't do it. So finally I went around the house. I climbed in through the window. I banged at the pins. I got them out, but the door would not budge. We got the bottom part of the door off. The top of the door couldn't come off. My son then climbed back out of the window, went around the house again, came inside and tried to push the door from the other side. He couldn't do it. My wife tried banging on the door from the other side. Finally, I climbed out the window, came around the house, came back inside. I tried to push the door, couldn't do it. Finally, I climbed up and wedged myself between the wall and the door and pushed with my feet and the door went flying off. So I thought that would be a wonderful thing to base a Yetzias Mitzrayim, getting out of Egypt here, my daughter's getting out of their room, but it has absolutely nothing to do with what we're going to talk about tonight. Just, I thought it might have to, I thought it would be nice to have that, but unfortunately I couldn't make any kind of real connection. What? What's that?
Everybody
got
wet.
No one got wet. My kids loved it. It was great entertainment for them, but other than that. We know that there are four Lashonos of Geula. There are four languages of redemption that are mentioned in the Chumash. It's in Parshas Va'era, and if you're holding a Chumash and you want to look at it, it's on page 318. And the Arba Kosos, the four cups of wine that we drink at the Pesach Seder, are based on these four Lashonos Shel Geula. So we know that the four are, and I'll read them inside in a moment, but they're V'hitzalt, V'hotzeisi, V'hitzalti, V'go'alti, V'lokachti. So we'll read it in a moment, and I'm going to share with you a thought that is based on something the Meshech Chachma says. I'm going to deviate a little bit from the way he puts it, but I'm going to use his basic idea. I spoke last night at Yeshiva Sar Yisrael to the Bachram there, and I'm going to adapt the same thought here, although we're going to use it in a little bit of a different way tonight than I did last night. These four Lashonos of Geula, these four words, everybody has a take on these four words. Any Mefarish, any commentary you look at that has to do with Pesach, you'll find another take on how to approach these four words. It's such a basic theme in the Haggadah. The number four is such a basic theme in the Haggadah. And so there are four sons, etc. You'll find that everybody has some approach to these four Lashonos. The Meshech Chachma does as well, and that's interesting. But what's really interesting that the Meshech Chachma does, that I haven't found anyone else who did it, who does it, is that the Meshech Chachma seeks to show what it is that these four Lashonos, what does each one is a separate part of the redemption. He breaks down the redemption to four parts and he aligns each one of these words with one of those parts, and then he seeks to show that something that the Jews did while in Egypt merited each one of these four Lashonos of Geula, meaning that the Jews did four things in Egypt and each one corresponded to a different one of these words. And it is in the zechus, in the merit of what we did in Egypt, that we we're able to have these four types of geula, these four types of redemption. So let's go through it. And after we go through it, I'm going to present to you an inevitable conclusion that we will arrive at based on his thought. And we'll see where that goes. The psukim in Parshas Va'era say, if you're holding a chumash, I am starting from Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Lachein amor livnei Yisrael ani Hashem. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, now tell the Bnei Yisrael I am Hashem. Votzeisi eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim. I will take you out from under the bondage of Mitzrayim. That's the first one. Votzeisi, I'll take you out. Vihitzalti eschem me'avodasam, and I will save you from their slavery, from being slaves. Vigo'alti eschem bizra netuyo v'shvatim gedolim, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great miracles. Vilakachti eschem li la'am, and I will take you for me as a nation. Vayisi lachem elokim, and I'll be for you as a God. Vidatem, and you will know ki ani Hashem elokeichem, that I am Hashem your God. Hamotzi eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim, that takes you out from under the bondage of Egypt. So the four words, Votzeisi, the Torah says, I'll take you out of the bondage. Vihitzalti, I'll save you from the slavery. Vigo'alti, and I'll redeem you. Doesn't say from what, it just says how. It says with an outstretched arm and with great miracles. And I'll take you for me as a nation, and you'll know that I'm God. V'lokachti. Those are the four Lashonos of Geula. Says the Meshech Chachma, these four correspond to four types of redemption. We Jews in Egypt were subject to four different things. Actually, we were subject to three, and then the fourth one is another aspect of it. We were subject to, obviously, to slavery. We were subject to the threat of death. We were under the thumb of the Egyptians, and they could have done anything they wanted to us, and many Jews were killed. So there was slavery, there was death. We were also subjugated spiritually. We worshipped Avodah Zarah. As the Malachim, as the angel said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, during Kriyas Yamsuf, when we went through the Yamsuf, when we went through the sea, they said, Halalu of the Avodah Zarah, v'halalu of the Avodah Zarah. These are idolaters and these are idolaters. Why are the Jews any better than the Egyptians? We worshipped idols when we were in Egypt, unfortunately. So that's another aspect of being in Egypt. And three of these words, each one is meant to correspond to removing one of those things. And the fourth one is, in the positive, is Hashem taking us as His nation. So the way He says it is that, V'hotzeisi eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim, I'll take you out of the bondage of Egypt. That's referring to the spiritual bondage of being of the Avodah Zarah. I'll take you out from being of the Avodah Zarah, from being idolaters. Now you won't be idolaters anymore. That in itself is a wonderful thing, not to be idolaters. I'll save you from the slavery. He says it slightly differently than this, but I'm going to present it this way. I'll save you from the slavery. That's very clear. You're slaves, and I'll save you from the slavery. Now you won't be slaves anymore. And I'll redeem you with an outstretched arm and with miracles. That's from the threat of death. You'll be under the threat of death. I'll save you from that too. I'll redeem you. And after all of that, then there's a positive side. I'll take away the three negatives, and I'll replace them all with a positive, which is, I'll take you for me as a nation. Which means, I'll give you the Torah, which is the next step to coming out of Egypt. We go from Mitzrayim to Har Sinai, and we get the Torah. Those are the four steps. Now the Meshech Chachma says that these four, as we mentioned, also correspond to the four kaisos, the four cups of wine that we drink. The four cups of wine that we drink are at very specific points of the Seder. What's the first cup? Kiddush. What's the second cup?
Magid.
Okay, so it's at the end of Magid, the end of when we told the whole story of Mitzrayim, right before we start with Matzah, the very, very end. And at that point, right before the end of Magid, we start Hallel. We say the first couple of paragraphs of Hallel, and the rest is said after the meal is over. But we say the first two paragraphs of Hallel, first two parts of Hallel. That's where you drink the second cup. What's the third?
Benching.
The third is for benching. And the fourth is for the rest of challah. It's at the end of challah. Those are the four cups of wine. So he says that these four cups are going to correspond specifically to these four ideas. Removing avodah zarah, not being idolaters anymore, not being slaves anymore, not being under the threat of death, and finally being taken to Hashem as a nation. Now, how does that work? So first, and this is his real novelty, is to understand what we did in Mitzrayim that merited these four things. The Medrash says that the Jews in Mitzrayim did four things that, despite the fact that there was a precipitous drop from the level of spirituality that our ancestors had, meaning Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and then the Shvatim, the tribes, there was a precipitous drop from then down to when we left Egypt. We were at the Memtesh Shari Tumah, we were at the 49th level of impurity. Nevertheless, there were four things the Jews were very careful with. Number one, the Jews were not involved in Gilui Arayos. The Jews were careful with immorality. In regard to the relationships that they had, the Jews did not become involved with the Egyptians. Both the men and the women stayed away from the Egyptians. We know the only exception, the only woman who was an exception, was Shlomis Bas Divri, which is the story we have in the Chumash. Other than she, there was no one else. And the men also were very careful not to be involved with the Egyptian women. So they were careful with that. Number two, the Medrash says, the Jews didn't speak Lashon Hara. They were very careful not to speak about each other. They didn't speak Lashon Hara. They may have committed idolatry, but they didn't speak about each other. Number three, Lo Shinu Es Shemam. They didn't change their names. The Gemara says, Reuven and Shimon went down to Egypt. Reuven and Shimon came out of Egypt. What does that mean? It means that they named their children for the previous generations. They didn't change their names. They kept their Jewish names. They didn't be named for Egyptians. They remained clearly Jewish in their names. They kept their names. And finally, Lo Shinu Es Lashonam. They didn't change their language. They kept the Jewish language, which means that number one, they spoke Lashon HaKodesh. They spoke Hebrew. They may have also been conversant in Egyptian, but they did speak Lashon HaKodesh. And the way they spoke, they had a refined speech. They avoided nivol peh, which is an improper speech. They didn't use profanity. They were careful in how they spoke. Those are the four things that we Jews did in Egypt. Says the Meshech Chachma, these four things correspond to the four types of geula that we got. And each one was a zechus for another part of the geula. So this is how he explains it. Number one, the Jews were careful with immorality. They did not get involved with the Egyptians. They stayed separate. The Gemara tells us that kedusha, holiness, sanctity, is based on two things. Sanctity is when a person is careful not to be involved in avodah zarah, in idolatry, and not to be involved in gilui arayos, in immorality. Those two things together create kedusha. When it says in Parashas Kedoshim, "Kedoshim tiyu," you should be sanctified. It's referring to not to worship idols and not to be involved in immorality, in gilui arayos. Although we Jews did slip when it came to idolatry, the Jews did worship idols, but they did not slip when it came to gilui arayos, to immorality. So in the zechus, in the merit, that we Jews held on to one aspect of kedusha, to one aspect of sanctity, Hashem gave us the ability or the gift of pulling us out of idolatry, which is the other aspect of kedusha, the other aspect of sanctity. Because we held on to one aspect, He pulled us out of the one that we weren't doing well in and restored us to a nation that does not worship idols. That's number one. That's the first Lashon of Geula. Second, we didn't speak Lashon Hara. let me say it in a I'm going a little bit in an out of order over here, but this is the way he presents it, so I'll say it in this way. We didn't speak Lashon Hara. This, he says, is corresponds to the Lashon of Geula that saved us from death. Because even though the Egyptians were killing us, we didn't kill each other. We didn't speak evil about each other. We all know that the tongue can give life and give death. And we were careful with how we spoke, and we did not kill each other with our tongues, as we know we can very easily do. So because we were careful in how we treated each other the way we could, I mean, we were slaves, we didn't have much control over each other, we couldn't really save each other's lives physically. If an Egyptian was killing a Jew, there wasn't much the Jews could do to stop it. But at least internally, we didn't kill each other. We were careful with each other. In the zchus that we were careful with each other's lives, Hashem saved our lives. The third one is that He took us out of the slavery, the actual work that we had to do. The Meshech Chachma explains that a slave has no identity. A slave just is. He doesn't have any identity. He has no sense of self. He does whatever his master tells him to do. There is no history. There is no past, no future. A slave just is whatever the master tells him. We Jews didn't change our names, which means we refused to become Egyptians. We kept our identity and we kept our past. We kept our identification with where we came from our ancestors, from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. In doing so, we maintained a level of autonomy. It wasn't actual autonomy because we were slaves, but we maintained the level of being separate from the Egyptians in a way that slaves normally can't or don't. In that zechus, Hashem removed us from the slavery. And finally, Loshinu es Lashonam, we kept our language. The language is Lashon HaKodesh. It's the Lashon, the language of sanctity. What's significant about a Lashon HaKodesh? Why is Lashon HaKodesh special? It's the Lashon of Hashem. It's the Lashon of the Torah. It's the language in which the Torah is written. That's what makes it holy. It's the language in which Hashem created the world. It is the language of the Torah. We Jews who kept our language, the Lashon HaKodesh, we were still able, therefore, to go out of Mitzrayim and get the Torah because we kept our language. And so Hashem gave us the fourth thing, which is V'lakachti Eschem Lila'am, I'll take you as a nation, which means I'm going to give you the Torah. So again, the four things that we did line up with the four things that Hashem did for us at the end of the slavery. Explains the Meshech Chachma that these four things also line up with where the cup is drunk during the Seder. In the first cup, which is Kiddush, that's self-explanatory. Kiddush is Kiddusha, is sanctity. The Kiddusha of that we were careful not to be involved in Gilui Arayos and immorality, and Hashem took us out and removed us from Avodah Zarah, from idolatry. Those are the elements of Kiddusha. That's Kiddush. That's the first cup of wine. The second cup of wine, which is on Hallel, which is the Hallel of being of thanking Hashem for Magid. Magid is the whole story of Mitzrayim. The Meshech Chachma says that Hallel is the first two paragraphs of Hallel. If you break up Hallel into two parts, the part before the meal and the part after the meal, the part before the meal focuses on the past. It focuses on where we came from. It goes through who we're from. It goes through the Jews in the Midbar. It goes through the Jews going through the Yam Suf. There, he wants to say, it lines up with the aspect of Loshinu es Shemam, they didn't change their names, for which Hashem took us out of the slavery. The third cup is benching. Benching is thanking Hashem for food. That's obvious. That's clear. Food is obviously what sustains us, what keeps us alive. That corresponds to the fact that we didn't speak Lashon Hara. and we didn't kill each other, so Hashem saved us from death, and he took us out. And finally, the fourth kos, which is at the end of the whole Haggadah, at the end of Hallel, where we're praising Hashem for everything, for the future, for the past, the whole, everything, that, and we say Nishmas, we say everything at the end. So there, that has to do with Hashem taking us as His nation, giving us the Torah, which is because we were careful not to change our language. That is based on what the Meshech Chachma says. He has a few, he says it slightly differently than I said it, but that's essentially the idea. So I thought it was a very nice Meshech Chachma. I thought it was a nice presentation. And I used it last night for the Bachrim and Ari Yisrael who are about to go on vacation and leave the yeshiva setting. Excuse me. So I spoke to them about how you see that even though we Jews had sunk to a very low level, but because we held on to certain things, those things became very, very important. When someone has nothing and is able still to hold on to some aspect of Avodas Hashem, of serving Hashem, that's very, very special. And Hashem rewarded us by giving us something in return for each of the four things that we kept. What I suggested to the Ari Yisrael Bachrim is that even if they're leaving yeshiva for a time, for vacation, that it is appropriate to make up one's mind to be steadfast in some small areas of Avodas Hashem to make sure not to let go of, so that way when they come back to yeshiva after the vacation, they'll be ready to go full steam ahead. It's a nice lesson. It's not really relevant for everybody here in this room. What is striking to me, though, is the question of the fifth kos. If we're going to accept this presentation of the Meshech Chachma, then we need to really think about the fifth kos. What is the fifth kos? Who's heard of the fifth kos? The fifth cup? Go ahead.
It's about the Geula, the final Geula.
Okay, the final Geula. What is the fifth kos? When is it drunk? Do we drink a fifth kos? Okay, so there is a Gemara that talks about drinking a fifth kos. There is such a discussion in the Gemara. We generally don't. What's that?
Some do. It's not
a simple thing to do. Halakhically, it's not simple to do. It's you have to know what you're doing if you're going to drink another kos. It's not simple to do. One should not do it unless one learns the halakha. But but there is the concept of a fifth kos. Now we have a kos shel Eliyahu. So before we go further, let's just dispel the myths about kos shel Eliyahu. My son and daughter were arguing the other day about does Elio actually come and take a sip or does he not actually come and take a sip. My son was arguing very, very strongly. I watched it carefully last year and not a drop was taken out. It is not true. He does not come and take a sip. And my daughter said, no, it's not true. He does come and take a sip. I saw. Okay. So what actually is the kos shel Eliyahu? So the Mishnah Berurah says that the reason why we pour a kos shel Eliyahu, let's say the other way around. We open the door. We pour a cup and we open the door. And then we say Shmo Hamascha, and we say that it's the kos shel Eliyahu. Now, my wife's grandfather, Olav Shalom, had a minug that whenever they did kos shel Eliyahu, he would say Baruch Haba. Baruch Haba, welcome. And he's welcoming Eliyahu, implying that Eliyahu actually comes through the door. First of all, Eliyahu Anavi has two forms. He has his physical form, like all of us here in this room. Eliyahu Navi is a person. He has a physical form. He has never died. He is still alive. He's still alive from all the way back then, from thousands of years ago when he appears in the Navi. He's still living. But Eliyahu Navi, as we know, the Navi tells us, went up in a chariot up to heaven. But he's not dead. He's alive. So what does that mean? Eliyahu Navi has a form which is physical, and he has a form which is not physical, and he's able to move around in the spiritual realm in a non-physical form. It seems that he takes one of those two forms, not both simultaneously, but sometimes he's in his physical form, sometimes in his spiritual form. I don't believe that he can choose. It's probably up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu which form he takes. We know that it is possible for a person to have Gilui Eliyahu, to be exposed to Eliyahu Hanavi. It is possible. It does happen from time to time. It only happens to special people. I can't give you any personal experiences about it. It's never happened to me. But there is such a thing, and we do believe that it happens. Most likely it happens very rarely today, because we are spiritually so far removed from our ancestors. But it can and does happen. Also, by the way, it's also not just likely, but certain that the amount of stories we have involving the appearance of Elio are exaggerated. No question that these stories are far more than it actually happens. But we can and does happen. Elio Hanavi at the Seder certainly does not show up in his physical form. None of us have seen him, so he doesn't show up in his physical form. If he does come, it's in his spiritual form. In his spiritual form, he doesn't need the door to get in. He can just appear. He just comes there. Just like at a bris milah, where we know Eliyahu HaNavi comes to every bris milah, we have a kisei shel Eliyahu, we put a chair for Eliyahu HaNavi. He comes in his spiritual form. It's not that one of the guests who you never saw before is actually Eliyahu HaNavi in disguise. No, he's there, but he's there in a spiritual guise. At the Seder, it's the same thing. He doesn't need the door open for that. Plus, in his spiritual form, he doesn't drink anything. The wine can only be drunk by a physical being, and Eliyahu HaNavi, in his spiritual form, doesn't drink any wine. So there's no drinking of wine going on at the Seder. So then why do we open the door, and why do we pour a cup of wine? If he comes, he comes. If not, not. So why do we do this? So the Mishabura explains, we open up the door because at the end of the Seder, when we have gotten to the point of recognizing all that Hashem has done for us, and recognizing all that He will do for us, and we are at a point of true emunah, of true belief and trust in Hashem, that night, the night of the Seder, is Leil Shimurim, is a night of protection. We are told it's a Leil Shimurim, it's a night of protection. What does a night of protection mean? Does it mean that nothing bad could ever happen on the night of Pesach? Unfortunately, we know that bad things have happened on the night of Pesach. So what does it mean that it's a night of protection? The night is a dangerous time. Daytime is a much safer time than nighttime. More bad things happen at night than during the day. People are more frightened at night than during the day. It's dark. It's a frightening time. The Gemara tells us the nighttime is a time of mazikim, of demons. It's a frightening time. The night of Pesach is treated like a daytime. It is halachically and also metaphysically treated as a daytime, not a nighttime. We don't actually have 354 or 5, whatever, however, let's say that the year is 354 days of the year. We don't have 354 days and 354 nights. We actually have 355 days and 353 nights, because one of the nights is a daytime. The night of Pesach is treated as a daytime. It has all of the spiritual, metaphysical, halachic rules of day. That's why we say Hallel at the Seder. Hallel is only said during the day. You never say Hallel at night. Hallel is said the night of the Seder because it's considered to be daytime. That's why we say Hallel then. When it means that it's a Leil Shimurim, it's a night of protection, it's that Hashem treats it like it's a daytime. Therefore, you are no more in danger the night of Pesach as you are during the day of Pesach. And we are told, don't be more frightened during the night of Pesach than you would be during the day of Pesach. So if you're living in a time or in a neighborhood that is dangerous during the day, then it's dangerous during the night also of Pesach. It's no different than the daytime. But if you're living in a time and in a neighborhood which during the day you're not frightened, don't be frightened at night. And that's why the halacha is, and we'll keep this amongst ourselves, that's why the halacha is, you're not supposed to lock your door the night of Pesach. Because it's protected. There's nothing to worry about. Now, if you lock your door during the day when you're at home, if you do, then you can lock your door at night when you're at home, because that's what you normally do. But if you normally, when you're at home during the day, you don't lock your door, there's no need to lock your door at night because you're at home. And you do what you would normally do during the day. You're supposed to diminish. If you normally lock your door with 3 locks, then only lock with 2 locks. You should diminish what you do to protect your home on the night of Pesach, because it's considered to be a night of protection.
And you don't have to say Hamapel.
And you don't have to say, you know, well, Hamapel, so you don't say, you don't have to say the rest of Kriya Shema Lamita.
Right.
Right. When you go to sleep, you don't have to say all the other parts of Kriya Shema Lamita. It's a night of protection. That's the night of Pesach. We open the door to show that we trust in Hashem, that this is a night of protection. It's the nighttime, which normally you would not open your door in the middle of the night with nobody, no guest coming in, just open your door up. We open the door and we say, Hashem, we trust in you that this is a protected night. In the merit, in the zechus, that we trust in Hashem that it is a protected night, then Hashem will send Eliyahu HaNavi to be mevaser the geula, to herald and announce the final redemption, that Mashiach is about to come. And we pour the fifth cup as a symbolic gesture that this will be the cup that we will drink for the geula, for the final redemption. That's what the kos shel Eliyahu is. It's not the cup that Eliyahu is going to drink, even though you shake the table a little bit and the kids think that he's drinking. It's not the cup that Eliyahu drinks. It's the cup that we will drink when Eliyahu comes to announce the geula, to announce the final redemption. And we open the door to show that we trust fully in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the fifth cup. Now, we don't drink it because the final geula has not yet come. So, as was already mentioned, the Torah itself seems to allude to a fifth cup, and many of the Parshim say that this is an allusion to the fifth cup, because the next Pasuk, after these four, says, in Pasuk Ches, verse 8, V'heveisi eschem el ha'aretz, I will bring you to the land, asher nasasi es yadi, that I raised my hand, which means I have sworn, v'asei sosa le'avram le'itzchak le'yakov, to give it to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, v'nasati osa lachem morasha, I will give it to you as an inheritance, ani Hashem, I am Hashem. The Arachayim HaKadosh asks a question over here. He asks, I don't understand. How could Moshe Rabbeinu tell this to the Jewish people? He tells them, Hashem is going to take you out. He's going to save you. He's going to redeem you. He's going to bring you to Him. Excuse me, He's going to take you to Him as a nation. All those came true. And then he says, in the name of Hashem, V'heveisi eschem, I'm going to bring you to my land. Did those Jews go into Eretz Israel? Did they go in? They didn't go in. They ended up dying in the Midbar. They never went in. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh asks, how could Moshe Rabbeinu have told these Jews who are leaving Egypt that Hashem is going to do these 5 things with you, when in fact only 4 came true? The fifth one came true in their children, but not in them. So how could he say it? Isn't that a lie? Now, we could have answered, without the Aruch Chaim's answer, we could have answered that this meant, if you don't sin. If you don't sin, then this is what's going to happen. They sinned with the Meraglim, with the spies, so they lost the chance. But the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, really, he says that idea, but he says it a little more sharply. He says, let's read carefully the previous Pasuk, with the fourth word. I'll read it to you for those who don't have a chumash in front of you. V'lakachti eschem li la'am, I'll take you for me as a nation. V'yayisi lachem le'lokim, and I'll be for you as a Hashem, as a God. V'idatem, and you will know. Ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God. Hamotzi eschem mitachas sivos Mitzrayim, that takes you out from under the bondage of Egypt. Then it says, V'yayisi eschem el ha'aretz, I'll bring you to the land. Says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, the fifth language, the fifth lashon, the fifth word, is contingent. The first four were unconditional. Hashem says, I'm going to do these 4 things for you. But the fifth one was conditional. If, after I do the first 4 things, you then recognize that I am Hashem who has taken you out of the bondage of Egypt, then there'll be a fifth one. then there'll be Ve'ivesi eschem el ha'aretz, I'll take you to the land. And when I take you to the land, then you'll be there forever. It seems to me, if we're going to put these ideas together, that it would seem that although we Jews did hold on to four things in Egypt, there was an expectation or a hope that we would have held on to a fifth item. Had we held on to the fifth item, then the fifth word over here of the Hevesi would not have been conditional. It would have also been unconditional like the first four. The first four were unconditional because the Jews already deserved them because we didn't commit immorality. We didn't speak Lashon Hara. We kept our names. We kept our language. So we already earned the first four. The fifth one, we hadn't yet earned. Because the fifth one is conditional, as the Torah says, on what? Vidatem ki ani Hashem Elokeichem hamotzi eschem mitachas livos Mitzrayim. You will know that I am Hashem your God who has taken you out of the bondage of Egypt. Going to Eretz Yisrael is based on having this fifth thing. In some way, we have to know that Hashem is God who took us out of Egypt. What does that mean? I mean, we all know it. What does that mean to know it? How could they have known it before it happened? What does it mean to know it? So it seems that this is the idea of the coast Shel Eliyahu, and this is the idea of opening the door. The trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the complete and total trust in Hashem, that He is running the show, that He takes care of us, that everything that happens is from Him, whether it appears good or bad. Of course, we know intellectually it's good, but we're human beings. We see things as bad when they're bad. But we know that Hashem is running the show. And we are fully committed to understanding that and not questioning Hashem when things happen. And not questioning, well, why is Hashem doing this? Why me? Why me? Why is this happening? But accepting the fact that Hashem is running the show, and whatever He does, He does. And it's whatever, it's the proper thing. This, which is a very lofty level, this is something that the Jews did not do in Egypt. And therefore, they didn't merit the Hevesi, the fifth word, unconditionally. It was conditional, and in the Midbar, in the desert, they did not merit it. They didn't get there. They questioned Hashem when they sent the spies saying, yeah, they said, why did you take us here? You're going to just destroy us. We're never going to make it in. Why are you doing this to us? And because of that, Hashem said, forget it. I'm not taking you in. It'll be your children. We open the door on Pesach night because we want to show that we are fully committed to this idea, that we are not afraid. Hashem said that tonight is not night, it's day. Look outside that door. It's dark outside. You see the moon, you don't see the sun. No. Hashem says it's daytime. But what do you mean? Where's the sun? Doesn't matter, it's daytime. What do you mean? There's the moon. It's daytime. But it's dark outside. It's daytime. Good morning. That's what we're doing. We're opening the door and we're saying, right now, at 2 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock, 2 a.m., on the night of Pesach, it's not night. It is Yom. It's Yom Shehu Laila. It is a daytime. It's not nighttime. Because Hashem said it is. My eyes see nighttime. My brain says nighttime. My watch says nighttime. My children, the way they're acting, says nighttime. But it's daytime.
You won't have that problem in Alaska.
At this time of year, you would. At this time of year, in the middle. So it's a conviction that it is daytime. We're going to go to sleep now. Gotta lock the door. No, I'm leaving it unlocked. But what do you mean? But it's nighttime. There are burglars around. There's thieves around. Who knows what's going to happen? It's not nighttime. It's daytime. But it's daytime. It's the daytime. Because Hashem said it is. That's what we're doing when we open the door. That's the fifth cup. It is that level of emunah and bitachon that is necessary to merit the fifth language, ve'ivesi eschem el ha'aretz. It's important to note, the fifth one is being taken to Eretz Yisrael. To deserve going to Eretz Yisrael, which means, of course, getting Eretz Yisrael in its true way, which is with the Melech, with Mashiach, not the way we have it today, but in the way that we're supposed to have Eretz Yisrael. We don't merit Eretz Yisrael by somehow doing something which proves our love for the land. It's important to have love for the land, but that's not the way we're going to earn Eretz Yisrael. We earn Eretz Yisrael with our conviction that what Hashem says is true. That's how we earn Eretz Yisrael. You'll know that I'm Hashem, you have total emunah and bitachon in me, then I take you to Eretz Yisrael, and we get the geula shlema, we get the final geula, the final redemption with Mashiach, with the Beis HaMikdash, with wiping out Amalek, with all that good stuff. That comes from a conviction that what Hashem says goes. Emuna and bitachon. That's the fifth kos. The Seder is meant to get us to that point. We don't open the door at the beginning of the Seder, even though we say, Kol dich ben yesev yivsach. Anybody who's hungry, come in and eat. Right in the beginning. Halach v'anya. We hold up the bread and we say, anybody who wants, come on inside. Everybody asks the question, what do you mean? You're inviting people after you've already sat down? You're home from shul already. You're sitting on the Seder. Now you're inviting people in? The door isn't even open. We don't open the door in the beginning of the Seder. We're not up to there yet. We're not ready for it yet. We're sitting here today. It's still a week before Pesach. We're not ready for that yet. We haven't reached that level yet. If you're feeling like, I can't do that. I can't keep my door unlocked that night. I'm not, because we're not ready for it yet. What's meant to happen is that through the Seder, by going through the Seder properly, by telling the story, by eating the matzah, eating the maror, saying Hallel, talking about what happened, paschim b'gnayim, asayim b'shvach, starting with the negative of the of slavery and ending up with the praising Hashem and the singing and knowing what Hashem is about. That's supposed to get us to a point where we have such emunah and bitachon, we throw open the door and we say, it's daytime. It's not nighttime. I'm not afraid. This is what Hashem said it is, and that's, therefore it is. I have total emunah bitachon in Hashem. That's what the Seder is meant to do for us. Throughout the Seder this year, that this should be our goal. It should be our goal every year. But this year, we should try to implement these ideas. With each cup of wine, we should be building up to get to that fifth cup. With the first cup, Kedusha, and the second cup, with our conviction of where we've come from. The third cup, that Hashem saves our lives by giving us bread and giving us food. The fourth cup, knowing that we deserve to have the Torah, to be close to Hashem in that way. We are His nation. But the fifth cup, that we are so have such conviction in Hashem, emunah and bitachon, that whatever He says is true, even if it doesn't appear that way, even if it looks terrible, doesn't make a difference. That is what the fifth cup is about. Through the Seder, we should be getting to that point, and when we reach that point, then we truly can drink that fifth cup. We're not going to drink the fifth cup unless Mashiach comes. Mirtz Hashem, He will. But the fifth cup is for that reason. And Mirtz Hashem, we should be zoiche to fulfill the Seder in this way this year. We should have a chakasha v'sameach. And in so doing, then really Pesach will bring about the Geula Shlema, which is what it's meant to do.